racing's heartland. RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Welcome back to Racing Pulse. Got a special hour dedicated to the life and times of Winx, but not the stories that we all know about. We're not going to talk to Chris Waller. We're not going to talk to Hugh Bowman. We're not going to talk to the connections or the owners that we have heard so much about. We're going to talk to those who we don't know all that much about, who played an integral role in making her the greatest horse we have ever seen. And one man who knows the Winx story back to front is a man who wrote the Winx story. It is Andrew Rule, the biographer of Winx, the greatest of all time. Great to see you, Andrew.
It's good to be here, especially good to be here, as you know, Michael.
Yes, you've been a little ill in recent times.
Fighting fit now.
You were
not in the Winx class.
You've lost a little bit of weight. You could actually ride Winx at the moment.
I'm probably lighter than Stephen Paynton. But not as tall.
I want to ask you first up, before we are going to have a chat to John Corcoran, who is a great character, as you know, and he is the man who ran the stud that bred Vegas Showgirl, and it was a sliding door moment, the reason that we got Vegas Showgirl. And we're also going to have a chat to Peter O'Brien, who was a man on the ground when she first came into this world. So it'll be great to get his view on that. And a little later, we're going to have a chat to a young lady who has spent more time with Winx up close and personally than anyone has, and that is Candace Persine, who works for Chris Waller. And I want to talk to her about what her life is like now in the moment at the end of her career. We've got some lovely packages which have been put together by one of our gun producers here at RSN, Joey Pignataro as well. But for you, what was it that drew you to want to tell the Winx story?
Look, to be honest, I was approached to do it, and I was quite happy to do it because I thought this man's really shaping as something special. It's not too complex. I thought if I backed, I'm used to, Debbie Kapitas calls me the sleuth. I'm used to sort of getting the background story on things. So I apply the techniques of the investigator to writing the story of Winx. So what I did was go to New Zealand and find these people that were involved in breeding her mother and draw all the strands together, which is sort of second nature when you do what I do for a living, but it does make it a more interesting and complex book. But it wasn't overly difficult because by and large, most people do want to talk about breeding a champion.
And that's the backstory.
You're not uncovering a murderer.
And that's the backstory that we're going to talk more about today. Yeah. And the first person, or one of the first people that you spoke to, was John Corcoran, who is the man who bred Vegas Showgirl over at the Grange Williams Stud. And they've had a big weekend as well, because they also stand Zed. And there's a couple of great yarns that we're going to flesh out as well with John. But it is great to have a chat to John this morning. How are you, John?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Thank you for taking the time to have a chat to us about the reflection that you have of Winx and her career, but also how you came to be the man that produced Vegas Showgirl. And Andrew Rule writes about it in his book, and it's a sliding door moment. Can you just explain the situation, that how Vegas Showgirl came about?
I will. We were standing a stallion called Batavian for the Rogerson outfit, and in his second season at stud, he was a lovely big horse, and he had a heart attack covering his first mare for the season. And Vegas Showgirl's mother was booked to go to him, and I had to ring Rogerson plus all the other owners of mares at the stud, and to see if we could get them transferred to our other stallion, Al Akbar. And that's pretty much what happened. So Vegas Showgirl was conceived at Grange Williams Stud, and then went back to the Rogerson place.
So if accidental champion, John, Andrew Rule here. Basically, a case of the accidental champion. If that horse hadn't dropped dead, Winx's mother would never have been bred.
Absolutely, Andrew. Yep. Yeah, that's dead right. That's dead right. Yep.
It's an amazing story. When you got the progeny, Vegas Showgirl, did you envisage that she had in her the ability to produce a Winx?
Well, Andrew, she wasn't actually foaled at Grange Williams. She was conceived there, and then when she had a positive test and everything, she would have left and gone back to Rogerson's place. So she wasn't actually born at Grange Williams.
Did you take much convincing for Graham Rogerson? He's a bit of a hard-nosed businessman to just proceed.
From memory, I told him the mare was in season, and she'd have to be served in the next 24, 48 hours. So that's what I told them. Whether it was true or not, I'm not sure.
What was Saturday like for yourself and your son, sitting back and watching the day? Because not only was it Winx's farewell, which you've played a part in, but you also stand Zed and very elegant, winning the Oaks, and who knows, could be the next heir apparent to the mighty mayor for Chris Waller.
It was an absolutely marvellous day, Andrew. She looks like, very elegant, looks like a very, very promising mayor, and it's just great that she's with Chris, and I can see her reaching some great heights. Probably nowhere near as much as Winx, but she'll be a very, very good race mare in the coming season.
John, just to add to what happened at the weekend, I think Zed might have thrown a couple of other handy ones that produced results at the weekend. Was there one that ran third in a Hawke's Bay Cup and another one won in the country here, a country cup in Victoria? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Andrew. Jack Starr ran third in the Hawke's Bay Cup, and there was I just can't remember the name of the horse that won. It won at Ararat.
Yep.
He's got some promising horses about over here, and like, he stood at a pretty lowly fee most of his life, and they're not the greatest mares that he had, but he certainly left his mark.
John, you took me out in a paddock to see Zed. He was running in a paddock next to a paddock full of cows. He's as quiet as a lamb. Lovely, kind horse. You know, not overly big, but plenty of him. And yeah. You told me a story. Yeah. You said, look, this horse stood for two seasons down on the big sheep station in the South Island, and they used him over draft mares, I think, to breed show jumpers. Is that true? Or was that just a yarn you told me?
Yeah, that's a true story. Yeah, Mark, my son, he got them from down there. We've often said we should go down and have a look at the progeny by him down there, but we haven't done it yet. But no, that's what he was doing. He was serving draft Clydesdale mares and enjoying life down there. So no, he's a lovely, lovely, quiet stallion to deal with. Yeah.
You've had a history of stallions that have had unorthodox careers. Also, the sire of Doremus comes to mind. Can you tell us that story?
Oh, yeah, Doremus. Norman Pendicord was the sire, and we stood him for a few seasons, and anyhow, we bred Doremus, which was great, and then we were struggling for mares. No one really wanted to know him, so the Polo boys, they had a few of them, and apparently they were very, very good polo ponies. So they were always pestering me, ringing up or coming around to see what we had, and I said, well, why don't you buy the stallion? So, and anyhow, the bloke said, would you sell him? And I said, yeah, we'd sell him, all right. So I thought of a figure and doubled it, and which wasn't much. And anyhow, they bought the horse, and lo and behold, I think within 12 months, they'd on-sold it to Kerry Packer, and he turned out to be a very famous polo pony sire all over the world. They sent semen all to all countries around the world, yeah.
There's a Beal of polo ponies, they call him. And now, is it true, John, and we'll keep this a secret between us, that you were considering just turning poor old Norman Pendicott out in the bush? You didn't want to do him any harm. You thought, I'll put him out with the wild bush horses where he can get a few mares. And, in fact, when the polo fella turned up, it was quite a blessing. Is that true?
That's a true story, Andrew, yeah, for sure. Because he was such a nice horse, I didn't want to have to euthanise him. So I was going to drive him up to the high country on the desert road. And there's a mob of horses called the Kaimanuas, and I was just going to let him go there, and he would have been fine.
So many stories and so many good horses emanating from your stud farm. Thanks for giving us a little insight into the reason behind Showgirl, Vegas Showgirl, the dam of Winx coming into this world, and the sliding doors moment that meant that we got the best we've ever seen. Thanks for your time, John.
Thanks very much, Andrew. Thank you.
Nice and Michael.
Gee, likes you. Also, you were telling me off air that he almost never became a stud master. It was only a stroke of luck that meant that he ended up having
I think,
that fun.
This is a version of the story he told me over many beers at the New Plymouth Fishing Club, and that is that as a young man, he got a tip from a jockey for a horse at the local races in the South Island at some small place, and he took $20 from his mother's purse, and he went to the races, and he took a pick six. He had to pick six straight winners, and he took five favourites and the tip. And the tip was friendless in the market. The tip was about 33-1. And, of course, he got the pick six. He was the only live ticket. And he won $30,000+ in about 1969. It was enough money to buy houses, cars, farms. It was a lot of money. And he said, right, I'm going to use this to become a stud man. He went to America, worked in Kentucky. He learnt the trade. He came back and he pulled his money out, and he did lose his license at his celebratory party. But anyway, when he got back, he got his license back. He got his 30 grand, and that was enough to go and buy probably half of Grange William Stud, which was a big, you know, good property. And that set him up, pick six.
Yeah, and then that
a tip
compared with the death of the stallion prior to Vegas Showgirl's mum being served.
It's all in the book.
Meant that we have Vegas Showgirl. One man who's pretty happy that Vegas Showgirl came to be is Peter O'Brien, who was at that time working for John Camilleri, the man who bred Winx, and he was the first person to see the superstar foal. He joins us now. How are you, Peter?
Good morning, Andrew. Morning, Michael.
Tell us, what are your memories of that day now, September 14, 2011, and the foaling of what we now know as the Mighty Mare Winx?
I just remember seeing him born and saying, this is going to be a superstar. No, I'm only joking. She foaled unusually for mares. They normally foal at night time just because of nature, you know. And she foaled at 9 o'clock in the morning, and we were next door doing some reproductive work on mares. So John Freeson and I, the vet, went out, and the foaling team were foaling her, and everything was a very normal foaling. And as I said to you, Andrew, before, the unusual thing for Winx was she was up on her feet in nigh on sort of 10, 12 minutes, which is highly unusual. She was a very athletic foal all her life. One of those foals was just always on the go, doing circle work around her mother, always had a great temperament, and was sort of like an Elle Macpherson. And as a type, she was very pretty with long legs. And then as a yearling, when she went to the sale, she was, she was at the Magic Millions and probably didn't have the substance as most of the other yearlings did at that age. Sold well, but obviously, we would have hoped for more, and if only we'd known better.
Well, it's quite remarkable because she was, when you look back on it, an absolute bargain buy. And for the first person to be there when she was foaled to the end of the chapter where she was at her race day chapter on Saturday, and you were front and centre there. Can you describe what that was like?
Oh, it was just highly emotional. And I think, it wasn't Robinson Crusoe at the races who had it. Tears running down our faces. I was there standing with John and Dad Camilleri as she went past the poster on the rails with the Winx owners. And it's just, like as John said, everybody, the question, John gets peppered with is, God, how do you feel after selling her, But, I mean, that's the business. John's a breeder. And it's just pride. I mean, to have a small involvement in her, the greatest racehorse, arguably, of all time, it's pure pride. And it's an incredible achievement by Chris and the team and the ownership, how they manage her, particularly when she was a young horse. I think if she'd gone into the wrong hands, I don't think we would have seen what we were lucky to see, because Chris Waller managed her early because she was, a little bit weaker than others as a yearling. He looked after her with patience and care.
Well, Pete, you're the lucky man who got to see her first of all. We're going to have a first instalment of three packages that Joey Pignataro has put together. And it starts with her sale at the Gold Coast Magic Millions. And then we also have a chat to the jockey who rode her at her first win, Jason Collett, the man who called it to a stirring win, Alan Thomas, in the first real big victory. Tommy Berry also talking about their first involvement with a mighty mare, Winx.
My Street Cry from Vegas Showgirl. Here's the filly coming forward. One of the great fillies of the world. Zenyatta, of course, by the same sire. Wonderful sire. Gets a great filly. Does he get a great filly to sire? Here's the second foal of a good stakes winning mare as well. All right for the filly here. Bit of scope about here. What for him? 100, 80, 50. 40, thank you. 40,000. 40,000. 40 a bit. Street Cry filly out of a stakes winning mare. 40,000. At 230,000, is that right, Tom? You happy with that? At 230,000 in front, gonna be sold, gonna be quick. I sell for 230.
Winx is now picking up a little bit of ground via the rail. Lucy's Look is not travelling. It's second last and getting its ears scrubbed off. And Ultimate Dancer's last. Aperture led for home. Felines is coming out after it on the outside. And then Charma D'Oro. Winx is now getting to the centre of the track and is hitting the line well. And Yarrata Bell, but Feline sprinted. Winx is coming after it down the outside. Feline's the leader. Winx is closing in on the outside. It's finishing very fast. Gets up. Good win. It's a Winx beating Feline. Yarrata Bell third.
There wasn't anything special about her performance that day. You wouldn't have thought back then what would have gone and eventuate here. Yeah, quite amazing. There wasn't a feel of, wow, this is going to be an absolute superstar.
Winx is last. She'll have to come past the 17 of them. Into the straight and Sky Limit past the 400, kicked away. Worthy Cause now went into second spot, about to give chase. Followed by Ride and Drive. Ullman is next and Ride All Wrong is pulled to the outside to the 200 metres mark, and Worthy Cause got the Sky Limit. Ullman getting up on the fence. It's Ullman and Worthy Cause there together with 100 to go. Look at Winx. Look at Winx. She's come from last. She stormed down the outside. Oh, what a win. Winx got up and beat Ullman and Worthy Cause. An amazing performance.
No one saw her coming. She'd lost six of her last seven in Sydney before she came up here, including beating the Oaks. She'd only won, what, two of her first ten or something. Going to the races that day at Caloundra, I didn't get up there and think, oh, gee, I'm going to see a wonder horse today. This is going to be the start of 30, 32, maybe 33 in a row. It was just another horse. She was back last on the home turn. And I thought, well, I can't waste too much time here because it's only Winx.
We drew a little bit awkward that day, and my instructions were just to ride her where she was comfortable, probably in the back half of the field, and just try to get on the track, because it was a big field. And you know, we jumped, and you know, I sort of just let her drift back. And yeah, you know, obviously I got back a little bit further than I probably would have liked. I had a majority of the field in front of me, because that was the only way I was going to get close to the fence. And I think I settled about one off the fence. And as we were going down the back, I was, you know, sort of looking at all the horses up in front of us, and you know, I must have been 12 to 15 lengths from the lead, you know, even approaching the 1,000 metre mark. And, you know, as we got to the 600 metre mark, you know, I was still back there, and a couple of the horses in front of me started to take off quite deep, you know, 3, 4 and 5 deep. And I just sort of thought, being first up, I thought, oh, I won't do that. I thought, I'll just sit until we wait to return. You know, like, she's probably going to run home and run third or fourth, and, you know, it'll be a great run going forward, and better than taking off round them and getting close to them at the furlong and then dying in a hole and having a gut buster. No good for a horse first up. That all went through my mind in a split second, and you know, as we turned for home, I just pulled her to the outside and I suppose gave her a little bit of a shake-up. And she changed legs and started to accelerate, and just had this unbelievable feeling come over me. I've got them covered. As she rounded them up, I just let her win as she liked, easing down. Absolutely incredible.
For me, when I look at Winx, I never see her any different. She just looks the same. The start of a campaign, the end of a campaign, the year, the next one after that. She never looks any different. She always looks fit, well, healthy. She never changes in appearance to me.
On the way home, my wife was in the race, and I was going to get in the car, and you know, she jumped up and down and saying, what an incredible win. I said, yeah, no, I said, unbelievable. I said, no, she could be the best horse I've ever ridden. I've never had a horse accelerate like that. But I actually can't believe I'm saying it myself. And as it turned out, I was right.
The run of the standard that she's run for so long, year in, year out, against the best horses we have to offer, stamps her as one of the all-time greats.
To have the ride on her is something I'll always remember. And, you know, to be the first of the winning sequence, it's a ride that keeps on giving anyway.
Probably something that I didn't appreciate at the time, but I really appreciate it now, and it's something I can tell my kids when I get older. But she's been an amazing mare. It's a shame, and it's very sad that it's coming to the end, but I think we're very blessed and lucky that we've had her around for as long as we have.
And Winx is the widest coming down the outside. High above at the 300 narrowly from Diamond Valore is about to be called upon. Hampton Court runs home. Hauraki over on the inside. And Winx is the widest coming down the outside with Supara. Diamond Valore, Winx on the outside. Supara. But Winx has dashed up, taken the lead. And Winx for the far lap. Winx goes on to win it from probably Hauraki second.
Soul of Racing, RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Welcome back to our special look back on the wonderful career of Winx. We're about to have a listen to a package containing the four Cox plates and the talk around how good she was from those who know her the best. But Andrew, your summation of the four Cox plates after writing the book and the people you spoke to, is it the greatest single achievement you think a horse has done in Australia?
I do. I mean, four Cox plates stands for itself. We'll never know what a horse like So You Think might have done had he stayed here. I'm sure he would have won three. We'll never know what Saintly might have done had he raced beyond 4 years old. He was probably underrated by history, I think. But she's done it. She's sound. A lot of horses at that level aren't going to stay as sound as she has until they're 7 years old. It's a tribute to her native toughness and to Chris Waller's handling.
Chris Waller especially, you got to know very intimately, but not just Chris, his parents as well.
His parents.
And the background of Chris.
I probably know them better. No. I went to see them at home at Awapuni, which is a suburb of Palmerston North, right near the racecourse, funnily enough. They're farmers. They were dairy farmers. They came in from the farm a few years ago. And Chris always said he learned a lot from his father and his grandfather. He said they're good stockmen, good with cattle, good with horses, good with any animals they had. And you can see that in the way Chris goes about his business. He's not sort of a punter looking for the next good bet. He's a guy who's looking after the stock the way that a good dairy farmer does and the way that his own father did. And he learnt by his father's example. But his father and his grandfather, of course, were from a family of horsemen as well. It's that great New Zealand tradition. You know, in New Zealand, we have farmers who breed horses, racehorses, gallopers, far more than we do in Australia. It's a real thing there. Most cockies will have, 100 cows and a couple of thoroughbred mares. And that's the sort of background Chris comes from. And it comes through in everything he does.
Was he always going to be a trainer, according to his family?
His mother was a teacher and a lovely woman, Marilyn. They're lovely people. And her father was an agricultural expert, scientist of some sort. And she was very keen for Chris to go to the big ag college over there and become a top agricultural, figure. And I suspect had Chris gone that way, which he could have done, by now he'd own six farms.
Mm.
He's that sort of bloke.
Yeah.
He's just competitive. He's an incredibly hard worker. I'm not sure where the competitive streak comes from. He's not one of, 10 kids. He's got one older sister. So he's been a sort of a special kid in his way because he had one big sister, Megan, who's about 5 years older. And the grandparents lived next door. So he was always the apple of his family's eye. But, of course, he wasn't spoiled because he was out there, when his dad didn't get home from the races one day. A rare occurrence. He took his mother out when he was three and started the milking machines.
Mm.
He was that sort of kid. She was very proud of the way he knew what to do.
And the other major component of the story is the Australian component of Hugh Bowman. And how do you compare Hugh's parents and life on the farm?
A version of the same thing. Different sort of farmers. They're graziers from up near Dubbo. They're one of the oldest families around the Bowmans. Their ancestor, A. Bowman, came out in 1898 on a convict ship but was the only free man on the ship. He'd been nominated by Sir Joseph Banks because of his skill in building corn mills. and he was sent out with his wife, Honor, and their children, first couple of kids, and they get to the colony of New South Wales, and eventually they end up on a property which is where Winks, on a property which is the same land where Winks was actually foaled, would you believe?
Sure.
And then they moved further up into the country at Dubbo, and they got hold of the existing Bowman property where they still live. It was swapped with someone for 2 gallons of rum.
Really?
This is in, you know, 1815 or something, or 1820. And the Bowmans have been up there ever since. So I think Huey's sixth or seventh generation horsemen, cattlemen, horsemen, great horse people. His mother, Mandy, is a good rider. He grew up on a horse. You know, he played polo cross. He did eventing over jumps. And, of course, he did stockwork with his dad. And he said all that instinctive stuff he did as a kid has stayed with him as a jockey. He doesn't actually have to think much. He just does instinctively what he knows has to be done.
And the four Cox plates changed both their lives, Chris Waller and Hugh Bowman. This is put together of those four races, speaking to the major players involved in those magnificent wins.
Hughie Bowman and Chris Waller looking for their first major. When we say major, we're talking a Caulfield Cup, a Cox Plate, a Melbourne Cup or a Golden Slipper.
I didn't know whether she was really up to Cox Plate standard. I thought she could either win by 5 lengths or not be good enough.
This is the cauldron for the Goliaths of racing. The atmosphere when these gates break open is phenomenal from the crowd.
So Winks will run favourite here. You've got to be a great mare to win.
Winks, well, Bowman's got plenty to give, and he's getting an inside run, and Criterion tried to follow him home, just had to clip off heels there. Winks got the dream run and shot to the lead from the cleaner. Criterion trying to get going with Highland Reel. They're followed by Hartnell and Happy Trails right off the track, but Winks is away and gone round the home turn. 3 lengths in front of Highland Reel, Criterion, and then came the cleaner, but Winks is well clear from Criterion and Highland Reel. Winks kept going by Hugh Bowman. What a win! Winks has bolted in the Cox Plate by 4 lengths to Criterion. Highland Reel ran third, Borners A4.
Well, I wanted to beat when I was a little boy, it was be a jockey. To be here riding on this stage is one thing, but to win a race like this, I can't tell you how much it means, and I just can't believe it.
What is it about Winks that is so special?
She's fast.
Just waiting for the clock to tick over now so we can get on with it.
And is she giving you the feel at the moment that she's every bit as good as last year or even better?
She's better than last year.
You're seeing on Saturday horses come from all around the world. Every horse should be respected in a Cox Plate.
As we build up to the Cox Plate, obviously it's been her main target race, all preparation, and look, everything's gone very smoothly so far, and look, any nerves or sort of butterflies that I get tends to be negated by the confidence that I have in the horse.
Hartnell's hit the front, Winks is going with him, and they've turned it on. The great race is on here. It's Hartnell the leader. Winks striding up to join him from Blackheart Part Awesome Rock. The rest headed by Venomous and Yankee Rose. But Winks has raced away around the home turn. She's put 2-3 lengths on Hartnell. Awesome Rock, Venomous battling away, and then came Yankee Rose. But it's all Winks in the straight. 4-5 lengths in front of Hartnell. A good battle going. This is a blitz. It's a Winks blitz. 2 in a row, and she joins the all-time greats of the turf.
She's a legend. Never seen anything better than that. Never seen anything better than that in a Cox Plate.
That was an absolute demolition job.
What can I add to that? Honestly, she's just given us all such an amazing ride. To be able to produce a ride that this mare's worthy of today, gives me so much pride, and it's just been a wonderful ride for us all. I'm rattling on, I just can't believe it's such an amazing experience.
I wouldn't be telling the truth if I sat here and said to you I don't think about her 20, 30 times a day. I think about her when I wake up in the morning, I think about her when I go to bed, I think about about her when I wake up at night.
Now there is expectation that she will win, and you know, I'm like everyone else, I can't ignore that, and that's certainly added more spice to the process.
Here comes Winks on the outside, sliding up now. We've waited 35 years for this, and Winks moves up the Galo Chop, followed further back by Folkswood between them. 2 further back, Humidor and Royal Symphony. It's Galo Chop at the 350. Winks on the outside, Bowman hasn't moved yet. The valley's rocking, and the world is docking. Winks goes to the front, 200 to go. Humidor to the outside. It's
emotions are just raw, and I'm just so proud to be a part of her. She's just an amazing athlete, and she will go down as one of the greatest to grace the Australian turf.
What do you think?
Well, he's my little cucumber, Bruce.
To call her, the feeling after the two races were completely different. After she won the third and Humidor gave her such a shock, I think we were all in a bit of shock after that. For me, it was nerve-wracking. It was something that I'd thought about through the year leading up to the Cox Plate, because you want to do her justice. She's one of the greatest horses we've ever seen, the world's ever seen, and to be the soundtrack of that is quite a daunting task.
None of us have been here before on a day like this. I mean, she's attempting something that hasn't been attempted before, so that's a first, isn't it? So it's the perfect storm.
It's becoming quite scary. One day, she'll get beaten. Everybody wants a piece of Winx.
Couldn't have imagined that we'd ever be in the position that we're in now.
One moment, one chance, never to be repeated with one horse.
To be stacking up all of these wins, it's simply unbelievable. Never close your
heart. Leave your fear. I can just feel it, just immediately, just boom, drop, go.
Now Bowman gets moving on Winks. She's only a length and a half to 2 lengths off the lead, just in front of Dargento, but here she comes, and the valley roars! Winks on the outside moves up, takes the lead from Ben Battle, then Rostropovich and Dargento into the straight at the 200 metres. It's Winks in front by a length. Ben Battle's going with her. Winks three-quarters Ben Battle. Winks is staving off Ben Battle. Cometh the hour! Cometh the legend! Greatness! Winks has done it! It's Equine Utopia!
I think she's the world's best, but by God, in my book, she is. When you've been fighting for it all your life, you've been struggling to make things right. It's so superhuman. And look and see and feel. There you go.
The electricity that came through my body when I turned into the home straight just then was something that I guess I only get to feel.
When it sinks in, it's going to be very emotional.
She's, in my opinion, the greatest horse that's ever raced in this country. I'm not going to get into any arguments about Seabird the Second, Revo, Frankel, Secretariat, Man of War. I've admired those horses from afar and will continue to. But I think in my lifetime I've never seen a better one. And I think what I read and looked at, she's the greatest horse we've ever had in this country.
Winks has bolted into the Cox Plate. This is a blitz. It's a Winks blitz. The Great Bear completes the Great Trilogy of the Turn. Cometh the hour. Cometh the legend. Greatness. Winks has done it. It's Equine Utopia.
Oh, it still gives the hairs on the back of your neck, makes them stand up, doesn't it? Andrew Rule joins me in the studio, who is the man who has written the Winks biography. That was a beautiful piece put together by Joey Pignatari there that captures the emotion of the moments of those four Cox Plates. And you've been front and centre for those. After the break, we're going to have the final farewell, the full stop, which was at Royal Randwick on Saturday, where you were as well. It was an amazing day, but what do you rank as the best moment on track with her, the fourth Cox Plate or the final farewell?
I'm a bit of a fancier of the Cox Plates because I think they were, Hughie Bowman said to me, the first Cox Plate was the one that really stands out for him. He said that was the day a star was born. You'll recall that he was very emotional for that first one, and never again was he as emotional, because nothing she did after that first one surprised him. He saw something that day and felt it that meant that he knew she was the best in every race she was in, and nothing ever shocked him after that. So I think that Cox Plate 1 is a big one, and she beat a very good field. Cox Plate 4, for obvious reasons, because she sealed it with when she need not have really, but she did. And then really last Saturday was a victory roll.
Mm.
I think this last preparation was a lovely victory roll, and had it not worked, she's still a great champion. She didn't need to win last Saturday to prove it, but she did. She did because she could.
Absolutely. After the break, it is the final chapter, the farewell at Royal Randwick, and we'll have a chat to find out what the life after Winx means for one of her closest confidants.
Foremost, I just wanted to get there safely, but most importantly, I wanted to win. So I'm only worried about that.
It just feels good to me. This outfit has taken me through pouring rain, boiling hot days, and it's kept going the same as Winx. It hasn't torn anywhere, but you've seen how worn this beautiful silk gets.
How many times have you worn this outfit?
Well, I haven't actually counted completely, but I think it's about 32 race meetings.
There's so many variables on a racetrack, and even with Winx, you just don't ever get ahead of yourself.
This has gone way beyond a racing moment. It's gone beyond a sporting moment. It's actually part of the fabric of the country. It's one of those things that for the next 100 years, we're not going to be here, but people will be talking about this day at Royal Randwick.
And Winx is rounding them up, coming right around the field. Kluger takes an inside run. She's gone for home already, Winx. She beats off Hartnell. Kluger going up the inside. Happy Clever can't go on. Winx is 2 lengths clear. Kluger sticks on. Then came Hartnell, but she's well clear, Winx, inside the final 100 metres. Today we farewell an Australian icon, the greatest of all time. Winx wins a third. Queen Elizabeth beats Kluger. Hartnell third. Happy Clever fourth.
She's shown no signs of going backwards, and we came here as confident as we've ever been, and what a journey it's been. I mean, it's hard to believe it's the end, actually.
It hasn't really sunk in yet to yesterday, let alone what she's done to me, but yeah, the next few days we'll keep Winx in the stable and just share some special time with her and reflect on how she's changed our lives.
You know, we were so fortunate that she's such an elite athlete in her own right, and that she overcame so many hurdles and obstacles in races and defied bad luck to actually win. So, like, we, after every race, we used to say, what were we ever worried about? I mean, we worried like hell before the race, and afterwards and think, well, there's never any problems for the whole thing.
My memories are, because I called the first of them, do I get a share of the 23 million? Do I count on that equation or not?
Why not? Well, it was the perfect farewell at Royal at Randwick in front of a full house and hundreds of millions. Well, maybe not hundreds of millions, but 62 million, they think, watched Winx's farewell worldwide. It was beamed into over 30 countries, and while it was emotional for most watching on, it wasn't as emotional for this young lady who we're about to speak to. And this is Candice Persine, who works for Chris Waller Racing and has been with Winx more than any person in Winx's life, and she joins us this morning on the line. Candice, great to have a chat to you. How are you after the big farewell on Saturday?
Still winding down a little bit, I think.
I'm joined in the studio by Andrew Rule, who you know well because he spoke to you for the Winx biography. Can you put into words what Saturday was like for yourself and Umut, who spent so much time with Winx, with the huge crowd, and the emotion of the day?
I don't think you really can. I mean, it meant so much at the same time, that and seeing all the people there and then applauding her, just, it was so emotional. And normally I'm pretty well together, but not that day.
What was a typical day, or what is a typical day like with you and Winx in the stable?
So I'll get to work at about 3:30, probably. It's a little bit before everyone else. And I'll just go down, I'll take her temperature, check her feed, make sure she's all right, go about my daily duties until it's time for her to go onto the walker, and then I'll watch her out there, make sure she doesn't hurt herself, bring her back in, get her ready for the track, and then Umut and Ben will take her out and look after her out there till she comes back for me again.
And the time you spend with her, the quiet time, what's she like? What's her personality like?
She's pretty chilled. She's not the most affectionate animal, which does hurt me a little bit, but I've got over it. But it's just nice to really... She's just so gentle and so genuine. She's just a lovely horse.
Candace, that's Andrew Rule here. I remember you telling me something that interested me. You said, I think you didn't get to the Cox Plate the first couple of years. Is that right?
Yeah, first I didn't year go or two? Down for the... Sorry. I didn't go down for the first one, neither did Amut. And I wasn't there for the second either. I think they were still really figuring out that this horse is just above everything else.
Right. So you got there for the third, and it was then that you realised... My God, this Cox Plate thing's like a massive rock stadium. Yeah, it really sort of you hadn't actually run into an atmosphere like that before. Is that right? Can you remember that?
Yeah, because up here I'm busy doing foreman duty, so that's really why I stepped into this role to look after her. But down there, it's just him and Ben and her.
Yeah.
So they don't really need me. But Chris was nice enough to send me down so I could be part of it.
And yep.
It was just an unbelievable experience.
Does she know she's a superstar?
Oh, I think so. I definitely think so.
I don't want to steal Michael's thunder here, Candace, but I will. It seems to me that a Winxless world is going to be a little bit black and white, a little bit drab from now on. How do you feel about that? Have you faced up to it yet, or are you still in that sort of daze?
Oh, it's still a bit numbing. I mean, she's still in the stable. I'm still hanging out all day.
Yeah.
So I think when she leaves, it's really going to start sinking in that she's not going to be coming back.
And what does that mean for Candace?
Well, I get my life back.
Do you want your life back?
A bit of here and there. I've just got to move on in racing. You can't just leave them. They're all horses. You still have to look after them.
Chris said that he thinks about 30 times a day at least. When he wakes up, when he goes to bed, Winx was on his mind. Was that the same with you, Candace?
More towards race days. Most of the time I'm just like, hello, I've been spending my entire day with you. I'll see you again in 4 hours.
Well, when does she make the final farewell out of the barn?
No one's really sure, but I'm sure when Chris think she's ready to go, then he'll let us know and we can say our final goodbye.
And just finally, you spent so many times, so much time with so many great horses. What do you think has made her so special? Could you pick anything out?
Honestly, I think it's just her heart and her will to win. My favourite race is when she chased down Red Excitement and Huey dropped his whip, and you can just see the determination and her just drive to get to the line.
Candace,
it's so
good to have a chat to you and get a little insight into the special relationship that you have with the Mighty Mare. And no doubt that relationship will continue. You'll be going to visit her and when she becomes a mum, and you'll probably look forward to working with some of her foals as well.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely be first in line.
Candace, enjoy the last few days with your superstar.
Thank you so much.
Candace Persine, who works for Chris Waller Racing. And they're the people that we probably don't get to see on the front stage that have the most intimate relationship with these horses.
Candace has spent literally hundreds and hundreds of hours with Winx. She picks her feet up when she, say, takes a temperature. You know how they do that, don't you? She picks her feet up and cleans them every morning, or more often than that. Also the work rider, Ben Cadden. You know, you go there and there he is. He's lifting up her feet and putting them in big buckets of iced water. They're literally underneath these animals. And if the horse did something wrong, it would injure those people. It's a very close relationship. It's like a nurse and a patient.
There's no doubt about that. And you've had a great relationship telling the tale of Winx.
Yep. And there's a bit more to come.
The book came out last year.
It did.
Is there another chapter to come now?
I think we really owe it to the public to add a chapter and put out a new edition of the book this year, which will be, I think, soft cover, different cover. I hope a different title even. Something completely different. More photographs, and that, of course, round out the story with the last sort of chapter of which would be this last prep plus the fourth Cox Plate. The natural the triumph is the fourth Cox Plate, and the other stuff is a cherry on top.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
I'm looking forward to writing it to get it right.
So having been so close to her and then witnessed the fourth Cox Plate and the farewell on Saturday, how do you sum up the champion that she is?
I think, Michael, that she's the Farlap of our age. I'm not saying she's better than Farlap. You could have arguments about this, and I know some facts and figures I will not bore you with, but that show that she probably could keep up with Farlap at her pet distance. But who cares? She's the Farlap of our age, and you can't be more than that.
Ruler, you sum it up beautifully, and we look forward to that new edition that comes out with the final chapter on the Winx fairy tale. Thanks for coming in today and reliving some of those stories.
A pleasure and a privilege.
Andrew Rule, one of the top journalists here in Australia, of course, works for the Herald Sun, has written Winx, the biography. You can purchase that anywhere around Australia, or you can hang on to the soft copy comes out with the additional chapter a little later this year.
I think so, because the hard copy might be very scarce now.
Absolutely. It's a collector's item. That wraps up our hour looking back, the reflections on Winx. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to all of those who contributed this morning. Well done to Joey Pignataro for putting together those magnificent vignettes of her career as well. Time for the 10 o'clock news. We'll be back on Racing Pulse from 8:30 tomorrow. Don't forget to jump onto rsn.net.au with Matt Stewart's news. Plenty of news bubbling away at the moment, and you can read about it all there. Until then, back plenty of winners. I'll be back tomorrow at 8:30.